Welcome to the Startup Lunchbreak Podcast. I'm your host, Pearl, and in each episode, we are going to unpack key insights, expert advice, and success stories to power up your startup journey. Let's make your entrepreneurial dreams a reality.
Hi, everyone. Once again, welcome. Today, we're going to be talking about building a customer-centric marketplace to capitalize on the $46.1 billion e-commerce opportunity across Africa. And like I said, I know we're going to have a really, really great discussion, and we're going to definitely learn a lot. And so we've got four speakers for today's session, and I'm going to briefly introduce them and just give a brief bio of what they do. And then I'll give them a chance to actually speak, introduce themselves, and tell us a bit more, give us more insight about their companies before we now dive into about them and their companies before we dive into the discussion for today. And as much as possible, we'll just have it like a laid-back conversation. If anybody has questions along the way, just raise your hands and we'll try to take you in somewhere along. And yeah, it should be a great conversation. All right, so first up, we have Fikayo Babatunde. And Fikayo is the Chief Operating Officer of the SME Mall. The SME Mall is a professional service marketplace that connects users with professional service providers. Now, not freelancers, but actual firms. And he's a strategist and an operations savant with over 5 years experience. So great to have you on the call, Fikayo. Next up, we have Arusha. We're waiting for Arusha, but Arusha Goswami is the co-founder and director of ClickerFix. And ClickerFix is a marketplace aimed at connecting users with trusted and verified artisans. So this is like plumbers, electricians, carpenters in your neighborhood. You go on the platform and it's able to connect users with trusted and verified artisans. And she has deep experience in product design, UI, UX, and design thinking. And that has really equipped her to look for alternative ways to solve problems through the customer-centric lens. So I'm really looking forward to also speak with Arusha. Next up, we have Hadi Hamed. Hadi is the founder and managing director of Hector Industries. And Hector Industries is a marketplace that develops, manages, and leases premier real estate. He's also an environmental engineer skilled in design and construction management of high-rise residential and mixed-use developments. So great to have you on the call, Hadi. And last but not the least, we have Charles Nichols. Charles is the founder of Nuzo. Nuzo is a blockchain-powered e-commerce marketplace where users can shop and earn Nuzo coins. And before that, Charles co-founded Sun Culture. Sun Culture is a startup that has raised nearly $50 million to offer Internet of the IoT-enabled solar irrigation equipment for smallholding farmers across Africa. So yeah, so those are who we have on the call. Great to have you all here. I'm going to hand over shortly to actually let you speak and tell us a bit more about you and your companies, and then we'll dive into the discussion for today. Esther, are you trying to say something?
Yes, she's here actually. She's logged in as ClickerFix. So okay. I sent her a speaker invite.
All right. So Arusha, you could just accept the speaker invite and we'll get you up shortly. All right. So let me hand it over to our speakers for today. So Fikayo, do you want to kick it off? Just introduce yourself and your company. Tell us a bit more about it and just in brief, and then we'll get into the discussion. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. So like you said, my name is Fikayo Babatunde. I run operations here at the SME Mall. So the SME Mall is basically a professional services marketplace. What does that mean? So the thinking is for every business entity, every product, whatever it is that you have existing out there, there are specific support functions that allow you to do business, that allow you to engage with governance and policymakers, basically. So we created a platform that's aggregating service providers across legal, accounting, human resources, business advisory, marketing and branding, technology support under one roof. Now, the thinking behind it is we found ourselves faced with a similar problem when we were setting out to build one of our products. We had to search for things and they had to search for resources. And we figured out that putting all of those resources in one place and making it possible for people to get access to those resources in one place reduces the time that they would need to expend looking for those resources. And it also allows them to focus on their core business, which is whatever product it is that they're building. So for instance, you're a car manufacturer, you don't have to think about your legal service. You can just have the SMMO provide that for you via a vendor, which is a law firm. You need a tax consultancy, you can have the SMMO facilitate that for you via another vendor who runs an accounting firm and all of that. So high level, that is what we do. And I'll cede the floor to the other speakers now.
Thank you so much, Fikayo. Great to have you here. Charles, do you want to go next?
Sure. Happy to jump in. Thanks. Thanks for having me today and for the introduction. My name is Charles Nichols. I am the founder and CEO of Nuzo. And Nuzo is an e-commerce marketplace for small businesses, so SMEs. So we have a marketplace with currently about 2,500 small merchants within Nairobi, Kenya, who sell everything from everyday foodstuffs, groceries, to fashion, electronics, smartphones, computers, household furniture, etc. And they sell their products on Nuzo because we offer a place where consumer demand is aggregated. And that's a really special feature because, as I'm sure everybody knows on this call, retail across Africa is very decentralized, right? It's very much kind of at the mom and pop shop level, small stores on every corner. About 98% of Africa's GDP is transacted face to face. Only 2% of that is digital, right? So we've got this massive opportunity to transact digitally to enable merchants to save money, to be able to spend their marketing dollars more effectively. But today, most commerce is kind of offline and face to face. So Nuzo is solving for that by aggregating demand on our e-commerce marketplace. And when folks buy and sell on Nuzo, they get the additional bonus of earning Nuzo coins. And Nuzo coins are blockchain tokens. They're equity tokens. So they appreciate in value as the network grows. As more people buy and sell in the network, the value of the Nuzo coin increases. And that adds a really unique benefit to a marketplace, which normally is very hard to get started because you need to kind of create both supply and demand at the same time up to a critical level before that marketplace has utility. And adding tokens in the beginning helps to solve that kind of cold start issue. So early adopters earn Nuzo coins that could increase in value by 100 times, by 200 times, and they could see a really massive return on that investment just by starting early. So you kind of incentivize that early demand. We launched Nuzo in June of this year. We've got about 70,000 users on the platform, growing very rapidly. And looking forward to connecting with folks on this call outside of Kenya as we look to expand Nuzo to other markets like Nigeria. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Charles. And great to have you here. Great to have you here as well. Hadi.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm Hadi Ahmed. I'm the founder and managing director of Hector Industries. So ideally, Hector Industries is a prop tech company in Africa. We started Hector Industries around 2019 with the whole idea and the vision of creating and helping boost Afro tourism and the hospitality industry in Africa. So the whole idea was that there are a bunch of people in the Nigerian market that didn't have ways in which they could make best return on investments for their properties. So we created a platform that helps these people onboard their properties and then create users that can actually have access to these properties. We saw how successful we were with doing that, and then we decided to incorporate co-working spaces and experiences to it. So the whole idea is maybe you're coming to Africa for the very first time and you do not have access to anybody or access to any service. So you just probably go up on Hector, click on literally anything you're looking for, if it's a restaurant, if it's a fashion house, if it's a place to stay or a place to work, and then you have access to all of these things. So the what we've been able to do with all of this is we've been able to give we'll be able to create a double-edged challenge, one which is providing users with efficient service to all of their needs, and then helping vendors to actually get better returns on their investment. So far, we have over 10 cities currently registered on Hector, and we have an average of probably 70 to 90 users per week. We've been growing rapidly in the market, and we're hoping that before the end of next year, we should probably be in all 10 major cities across Nigeria and West Africa, basically. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Hadi. Okay, so we're still having a problem with getting Arusha, but we're working on that. But meanwhile, thank you so much, Charles, Hadi, Fikayo. And I love that we have like such a great mix of people. We have products, we have services. I love that Nuzo also brings in blockchain. So I think we're going to have like a really good discussion around that. Now we're talking about customer-centric marketplaces, and we are also talking about using a marketplace to capitalize on the 46.1 billion e-commerce opportunity. So the first question I have is basically just in terms of like, because I think Charles alluded to it when he was speaking, building a marketplace is hard, and we'll get to that later on, but building a marketplace is actually one of the hardest things to build. So when is it, I guess the best question to ask would be, when you had the idea of, okay, this is the problem we are trying to solve, why was a marketplace the best way that you could solve the problem? And two, tied to that, what is the best, when should someone thinking about having an idea and deciding, should I do a marketplace or not, when is the best way to do, when is it the best option to go the marketplace route? Yeah, so that would be my first question. So let me just say that again. So number one, when you were starting out and had the idea, why was that? Why is it, a marketplace is not easy to build. Why was a marketplace like, this is the best option that we can use to grow what we are doing? And what would you advise other founders or other would-be founders who have an idea and are thinking about whether or not to go the marketplace route? When is it a good idea to go the marketplace route? So I think I'll start with Fikayo.
Okay. Thank you very much, bro. To answer the question, why a marketplace? So I don't believe it's a decision that you come to yourself. It is the market itself that determines that the marketplace is what is right for it. So what do I mean by this? With any product, with anything you want to push into the market, the first component is understanding what the market is, which is done by research. So by the time you poll, so let me use Nigeria, where we currently operate, for a baseline. So the Nigerian MSME landscape is currently 39 million strong. Now, across 39 million SMEs that the Nigeria Bureau of Statistics reports, you have a skew of about 80-85% of them in the nano micro segment, and just a little bit of them, the 15-20%. And small, medium, and enterprise level. Now, you want to provide, and then we have also professional service penetration, just a little bit over 2% currently. Now, you want to create exponential growth. You want SMEs to contribute value to this economy. How do you do it on an exponential level? How do you access the most people with the least amount of human capital, create a platform, make it accessible to them, make it usable, make it friendly, and make sure that it's something that fulfills their need, that is ensuring that there's a product market fit. So to answer your question in a sentence, the decision to say, okay, what the solution to this problem that I'm solving is a marketplace is ultimately based on the insights you gather from studying the markets you're trying to solve the problem for. Thank you.
Thanks, Fikayo. Charles, do you want to add to that?
So I've been kind of marketplace obsessed for a long time. My first business when I was still in university was a marketplace business for electronics. And I've just been very fascinated about this idea of kind of matching supply and demand dynamically. I think it's just a really kind of fascinating piece of how the economy works. And it's a really important part of how the economy works. But kind of more practically for Nuzo, what we were trying to demonstrate to the everyday Kenyan consumer or Kenyan SME is that using blockchain for payments can save them money and can be relevant for them, right? Because oftentimes when we think about crypto, we think about blockchain, we don't necessarily think about it as being very practical, right? It might be a way to earn a few dollars on speculative investments or trading on Binance, et cetera. But it doesn't really come down to the kind of everyday level of, can I buy rice with this? Can I buy milk with this? And we wanted to demonstrate that it had real tangible value. And so that was kind of the genesis for the Nuzo marketplace, that we could get that initial level of supply on there so that you could come with your tokens, with your Nuzo coins, and be able to purchase flour and purchase rice and see that you could actually save some money in doing that. And I think that that's a really important signal to send for every type of new financial technology that you're building as it relates to a marketplace, in that you demonstrate real tangible value for everyday users quickly and in a way that's easy for them to understand.
Thank you, Charles. Hadi?
Yeah. Why I feel like there's a need for the creation of a marketplace is quite simple. First of all, I think you just need to determine who your target market is and what's your audience. I think in all ramification, that's what determines whether or not you're creating a marketplace or not. So as we all know, there are different kind of business models here, B2B, B2C. So when you're able to probably identify basically what it is that you're trying to, what problem you're actually trying to solve, and the target audience or the target market in which you're trying to fill, that probably gives you a gap, that creates a niche. So that niche, you probably look through, you make your research, you understand the psychography to, or the graphics to which you're trying to create a solution for. That's going to determine an age grade of people in which you should be providing that solution for. When you're able to identify that, then you should be able to understand whether or not you should be creating a marketplace, because we already understand currently in Nigeria that we have a 46% internet reach. That's the number of people that have access to internet in Nigeria currently is about 46%. And this range of people range from probably 12 to around 40 years old people. So you need to understand if the people that you're trying to reach actually are within this age range. And if they are, then you understand, okay, I have to go to the internet space to actually create a market space for me to be able to sell my product. Basically, that's what I think, in my own opinion. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. So I think just from what everybody's saying, I think building a marketplace is pretty much just determined by factors. When you get the idea and what is the best way to bring this idea to the people, it now becomes like, okay, marketplace is the best idea, is the best way to bring that out. Now, like we've said before, a marketplace is actually not easy to build. My next question would be, what has been the most challenging aspect of building a marketplace and for you? So basically, Charles, you've done this. You said you were obsessed with marketplaces. And you've had some experience. What has been, let's start with you, what has been the most challenging thing about building a marketplace? I think you ceded to it when you first started about the creating demand and supply at the same time. But what has been the biggest challenge, and what does someone who is getting into the marketplace, getting into a marketplace business model, need to look out for to make the path a bit easier?
Yeah. So great question. And I think my answer is that there's always one side of the marketplace that ends up being harder than the other, right? Whether that's on supply or demand, if you're doing a two-sided marketplace, or If it's a multi-sided marketplace, maybe it's something else. But typically, it's either supply or demand. And with Nuzo, our initial thesis, and I'd be very curious to hear how others on the call have kind of found this as well. Our initial thesis was that what we needed to focus on was building supply. And that in order to convince small merchants to join the marketplace, upload their products, give good pricing, good service, et cetera, we had to provide a lot of kind of bespoke services to those merchants. So for us, that was inventory management, SaaS, you know, CRM, kind of giving the tooling and then providing incentives. So, hey, if you upload 10 products, you get $5 or we'll come to the store and upload for you, et cetera. And so we tried that for a couple months. And we basically found that no matter how much we spent or tried, we weren't able to cost efficiently get enough merchants to join because there weren't consumers there ready to buy their products. So they didn't care, right? Because they weren't going to see an increase in revenue because there wasn't enough consumer demand. So we shifted our strategy and focused instead on consumer incentives and discounts. And then what happened as a result is that we saw a huge increase in the number of merchants organically joining the platform and adding their supply. So I think kind of understanding what is actually the first side to focus on, what is the hard side? Is it the supply side or the consumer side? Getting that going and then kind of starting the flywheel once you have that figured out.
I think that's actually really, really interesting because I think like I've heard like there's so many experts that would tell you start with supply. But I do think like, I think in what you said in Nuzo's case, it's very interesting how that actually didn't work out and the demand side actually drove the supply organically. So I think that's very interesting to note. But one other thing I think was really great was the fact of if this isn't working, switch quickly and try something else. So I think that's something that founders need to be able to, you know, the goal, but don't be fixated on this is how we're supposed to do. Be able to quickly switch tactics when it's necessary. Charles, you want to add something to that?
I'd agree with that very much. Just to share another maybe insight. So my previous company, we were building an e-commerce for rural consumers, so smallholder farmers to buy fertilizer and seeds, et cetera. And something that we found after building out all the tech and the marketing plan and the PowerPoint decks and everything looked very good was that most of the target customers were older. So the typical farmer in Kenya is in their 50s or 60s. And we'd kind of worked with them on the technical literacy component where we had to train them how to use the app. But what we hadn't realized was that there was actually a vision constraint. So most of the target customer group had really bad eyesight and didn't have access to correct level of medical care to get, you know, that corrected. So they weren't able to use the phone because they couldn't see it because their eyesight was too blurry. So I think to piggyback on what you're saying about needing to pivot, you know, there's a myriad of reasons that can come up that can cause you to need to shift your target. And especially in the beginning, when you're building the marketplace, it's important to be very agile and willing to accept that, hey, maybe my initial assumptions were wrong and I need to shift. I need to try something else. And what we shifted was we said, okay, we're going to shift from focusing on the rural segment to the urban segment. And then all of a sudden we saw this kind of explosive growth take place. So it wasn't that the model itself was flawed. It was that the target customer group that we were going after didn't make sense for the product offering.
Right. Thanks for that. And I like that. It's not always like supply demand. It may also just be like your target audience. So I agree where you say at the beginning, you need to just be very agile. So I think that's important for people to note. Great points, Charles. Thank you. Hadi, do you have anything in terms of like biggest challenge in building a marketplace?
So for ours, it was basically creating a community because literally that's what Afrotourism and hospitality is all about. You want to create a product whereby the people, the users of this product are not just going to acquire a service and then that's the end of it. No, as with probably an apartment or an office that you'd use, you create, it entails you having physical connection with people. These people are the people that
over time get to become your friends, and you're able to reach out to if you need similar services. So for us, we understood that we had to be able to create a community-based ecosystem that helps travelers and tour agents to be able to navigate a country. So in an attempt to do that, at first, we probably didn't understand that at first. We just went about onboarding apartments all across Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya. We went about onboarding experiences, places that people should go to. And we realized that we're seriously lacking in the sense that people just come and there was no relation to our product. It was just a one-time user-friendly app and that was it. So when we realized that there was that gap, we tried to now focus on creating a community. Now what this community has helped us to do is it has helped us to create a group of people that are regular travelers. These people are tour agents, people are tour guides, you understand? They're able to reach out to these travelers, they're able to make friends, they're able to have a better feel of where they're going to. They're able to relate strategically with this, interchangeably with each other, you understand? So this has given people the need to want to come back and have another experience of something that they've experienced before. So for us, that's like a major booster that I could say for us actually gave us probably a 5x number of times with number of people got to use our own product. So I want people to understand that as much as they want to create an end-to-end user base, they should always understand what the gap is in between the services that they're providing. You understand? Some people just need somebody to be there for them, which is what these tour guides have been able to provide for us. And also, we've been able to look at interchangeable services that probably complement the services that we provide. What I mean by that is this. We're providing apartments for people and co-working spaces and experiences. We realized there was a gap in the sense that there was no logistic to probably transport these people back and forth. So we're able to onboard a logistic company, and that just gave us probably a huge ton of profits over the long of time. So what I'm trying to say here is people should be able to look at that middle gap. What is that bridge that connects the users with the vendors and their product with the with whoever it is that's providing that service, and they'll understand that there's more to gain from the services that's being offered. That's it.
Thanks a lot, Hadi. And I think one of the key things I got from you, and I think that's very important, is the idea that you realize the more focused on the customer you are and focused on solving their problems and making life easier for the customer, the more you realize what other added services you can give, right? It gives you more opportunity for add-ons. It gives you more opportunity for maybe another different product to serve a market. But becoming very customer obsessed, which I think is at the center of any customer-centric marketplace, and actively listening to your customers, especially at the beginning, is going to be key to your growth and your traction. And actually, as Hadi said, they focused on a community-based ecosystem. And that is actually a really great approach, especially now. More and more people are looking for that community. And I think that helps a lot in terms of like retention, the retention part of your marketplace. So I think those are some great points, Hadi. Thank you. All right, so I see we actually have Arusha here now. Arusha, you want to quickly introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about ClickaFix, and then we'll loop you into the conversation.
Great. I'm sorry, guys. I guess being in a tech startup doesn't allow that you get tech very easily.
You're fine.
Sorry for joining in late, but everyone. Hi, my name is Arusha, and I'm the founder of ClickaFix, a home service and repairs app based out of Nigeria. And the idea basically with ClickaFix is connecting your user with the everyday artisan in their neighborhood. So whether there's a plumber, electrician, you know, a hair and beauty expert or someone that's providing a service, it's basically a platform and a marketplace to connect those two, where one can access skilled providers and the other side can access skill seekers.
So All right. So I'll loop back to you in just a minute, just to get your insight on some of the other questions we asked. But Fikayo, could you give insight on what the biggest challenge for you was in terms of like creating a marketplace?
Okay. Thank you very much. I think to a large extent, Charles and Adi have touched on most of them. I personally resonate with Charles's comments around staying agile, because one of the things we faced early on is we had a number of hypotheses that the market rejected initially. So we had to be able to adapt fast. I mean, the version of the platform that we have live currently is like version 3, because we had to revamp and make sure that the insights we were generating from the customers were informing the things that we were doing. Now, with a service marketplace, it's a bit of a chicken and egg dynamic, right? Because on the one hand, you want to be sure that the service providers that you're recommending are fully vetted and are capable of rendering the services you're advertising. And on the other hand, you also want people to come on the platform to come and use those services. And initially, we're focusing on nano, micro. But one thing that we kept facing is people wanted Ferraris for the price of a Toyota. And, you know, it wasn't realistic. So we had to shift our focus, look for a different market segment, get a few big players who could afford to pay the ticket sizes that would, you know, enable us to achieve profitability in. And then once in a while, we're able to accommodate the nano and micro guys based on relationships with some of the service providers. So somebody might give you an initial bill of hypothetically $500, but if you've funneled sufficient amount of business that person's way over the course of, say, 6 months, that same person charging $500 for that service can take a pay cut and say, okay, I'm going to do this at $100. Okay, do $100 and give me a volume of 10 people. It makes sense in the end. So all of those things still trace back to staying agile and being able to adapt on the go to the realities of the market.
All right. Thank you so much, Fikayo. And I think yours is actually quite a unique situation in terms of like it's mainly services. And I think one thing across board is just, as I said, really, really listening to the customer, especially at the beginning, because not the idea you have, keep the goal in mind, but the way to get to the goal, the journey to that goal, the process, just be flexible with it, because at the end, the exact thing that is going to make you a success may not be what you actually thought of in the beginning. So definitely keep an eye on the goal, the major goal, but then also keep an ear open to listen to what the customer needs and build for them, adapt, and pivot quickly to serve those needs. Because once you are serving their needs, you're going to be able to make a success of it. All right. So I think those are pretty good points. So back to you, Arusha. So let me just kind of loop you in. So I'm going to throw the two questions we've talked about right now. So just in terms of like why a marketplace was, why the marketplace was the best option for ClickaFix, considering it's really, really hard to build a marketplace. And what is your view on why a marketplace, why should a founder that is thinking about starting a, has an idea, why should they go with the marketplace? And then what has been your biggest challenge in terms of building a marketplace and using ClickaFix as a case study?
All right. I think I was listening in a little bit with the other speakers, and I think a lot of the guys touched in on why exactly a marketplace and what the struggles are. But in my opinion, I think a marketplace gives you, as a founder, I guess, as a company, the opportunity to touch a lot of lives. And in terms of that, access a lot of needs that people have in one place. So, I mean, this is very easy to do a vertical in terms of like for ClickaFix, for example, we have like plumbing to hair and beauty. And I think it's very easy to stick, not easy, but it's easy to be concise in terms of vertical. But what the marketplace gives you is an opportunity to satisfy multiple people's needs at once. And I think that's something that's a driving force is behind ClickerFix. It's that, you know, we want to be the app or the solution for the every person and, you know, get to a larger population in terms of satisfying everyone's needs. And I think a marketplace is the best solution in terms of what that offers. And where it comes to the challenges, I think there are many. But something that we're facing right now, quite personally, is I think that change in customer behavior. I think it's very difficult in terms of trying to change the customer's perception of how they already do things. So taking like your service provider, for example, like in Nigeria, like how do you order a plumber? How do you get a plumber? How do you, you know, what are the ways in which you can get one? Is like word of mouth, seeing, you know, that someone reliable pass by and give you a number, your word, your friends, and like all those kind of methods. But what's difficult is changing people's perception that, you know, we have identified a problem and here is a solution that we're bringing to you in terms of a digitized form. So convincing people about changing their current methods, I think, is quite a difficult task, but if done right, can be very successful. And I think just bringing people's trust in terms of the brand and the recognition of a marketplace as well.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Arusha. All right. So so we've talked about the marketplace, why marketplace. We've talked about the challenges. And in there, actually touched on what I'm going to ask about right now. But I think I agree so much with Arusha in terms of like a marketplace is like a really big way to impact a lot of people at the same time rather than going like the vertical way. So I think like that's a really, really great point. One question I would ask you, so from your experience, and this is for everyone, for your experience in building a marketplace, so let's say there's a would-be founder on the call, they have an idea, they know they want to build a marketplace, they hear people say it's really hard, but now they're like, okay, so I can do this. What are one or two tips that you wish you had known when you got started that you think if they do now, it's going to really, really move the needle for them? So close to the challenges question, but what are one or two things that you think, if you're starting a marketplace, these are one or two things that you really, really need to do when you're getting started and that is going to move the needle for you the most? So Fikaya, I'll start out with you.
So I think for me, two things. First thing, stay agile. Second thing, understand that the product is not for you, it's for the market. And ultimately, the markets will be what dictates the direction that you go at the end of the day. I know there are multiple schools of thought regarding it that in certain instances, people don't know what they need until they have it in front of them. But I currently operate on the African continent. Changing people's mindset or working on social consciousness around the way things should be done is a tall order. But if you are able to react to the way the markets, the way the market dictates certain things, the insights that you generate from the markets, and that comes from constantly listening to your customers, listening to the markets they operate in, and trying as much as possible to, you know, just stay ahead of the curve in terms of what their expected needs might be. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Fikayo. I think those are two great points. I do agree. I think there's that thing of your customer. I think it came from Steve Jobs, and maybe the customer doesn't know what he wants, so you give it to him. And while that has its place, it's also very important to actually listen to the customer. Africa is just different with its own different challenges. So yeah, those are some great points. All right, so I think we lost Hadi, so we'll get Hadi back. Arusha, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, so I think that is very relevant. Actually, those two points are something I would have suggested as well. But I think from a mindset game as well, in terms of creating a marketplace, it's a lot of work and a lot of effort that goes into customers on both sides, the two-pronged approach of like whether it's a service provider or someone seeking a service. So I think it is, it comes with like a mindset of being patient and also being like with the skin in the game in terms of like sticking with your idea and sort of pushing through, because there's a lot of times where you think, okay, let me change myself or my business model in terms of what you started off up to now just to match what people are saying. But I think it's a matter of fact of believing in what you're also doing. And I think that contributes a lot to the success of your marketplace as well. And yeah, exactly like the other thing that we mentioned was being agile and being able to understand the market need very carefully in terms of both sides of the customers. I think oftentimes with the marketplace, we end up deafening one side of the customer side, whether that's your service provider or seeker, and focus on one. But I think it's important to be able to satisfy the needs of both at the same time. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Harusha. Charles?
Yeah, I think I'd echo what others have said. Maybe something to add that is kind of where the blockchain and the tokenization component comes in when we're thinking about building customer-centric marketplaces is that we now have this kind of unique technical capability to be able to distribute ownership very early on. So typically, you know, when you're building a startup, you're building a company, you're selling shares to investors. They're coming in as equity shareholders. Maybe they're giving you loans, etc. But that's only for a very, very small group of individuals and institutional capital providers. That's not everyday users, right? Because it's not practical to give shares in your company to an individual user. But with the blockchain, we now have the capability to do that. And we can do it in a way that is kind of programmable, the same way that we're creating software. So you can trigger the kind of distribution of incentives that can for an economic and a governance stake in what you're building. And we think that that's something that's really interesting and exciting for a couple reasons. First is that when you look at marketplaces like Uber, for example, right, which is a two or three-sided marketplace, depending on which product you're using, there are all of these governance issues that have come up, right? So you've got issues where the drivers are saying they're being underpaid and that they're protesting and they're kind of pushing for regulators to get involved, like has happened in Tanzania and Kenya, as well as many other countries around the world. And when you give tokens to your users on both sides of your marketplace, you can use those tokens to enable your users to participate in governance, right? And in kind of the blockchain Web3 world, we call this a DAO or a decentralized autonomous organization. And that's kind of the direction that we're heading with Nuzo, where the more you interact with the marketplace, the more Nuzo coins you hold, the more of a voice you're able to have in the governance and the direction of that marketplace. And I think that's just a really interesting kind of new feature that is now possible as we're developing marketplaces thanks to blockchain technologies.
All right. Thank you, Charles. And I do think, and you explained it earlier before, but I do think that that's a very unique take on it. And definitely something that more people should definitely look at, and just the idea of incentivizing and leveraging technology like blockchain and all of that to really push the needle and get buy-in early on. I think that's a really, really great idea, very unique. And I think that's something that definitely more people should definitely look into building marketplaces to kind of really help that chicken and egg situation as well. Hadi?
Yeah, for me, I'll just probably look at two major things, which are value proposition and sustainability. So value proposition in the sense that, first of all, you really have to identify a market. What I mean by identifying a market is you really need to understand there's a problem. You really need to understand how long this problem has been in existence and how long it's still going to be there before jumping into this market space, you understand, and then creating a product. Because a lot of the times people identify a problem and that problem is really, really short term. And by the time they're actually done creating a product, you actually find out that the solution, the problem is not as problematic as it started out to be. So again, value proposition, you have to really understand what problem you're trying to solve and the longevity of this problem. So for me, so I also said sustainability. Sustainability in the sense that if you're actually looking to build a product, try as much as possible to make sure that this product is sustainable in the sense that with or without the right type of funding, you're going to be relevant in the market, basically. I cannot overemphasize how important that is. Hector has been in the market roughly for about 3 years, and we have never raised. And it has been intentional because we understand that we were self-sufficient and we probably have a runway of more than over 5 years. That should give us enough time to be able to determine what our product fit is, what the right type of market fit is, probably twerk around with whatever it is we want to and just whatever it is we want to do, and then probably just have fun with our product. That gives you a leverage over whatever problem you're trying to solve. So take, for example, we realized that a lot of the times people that comes to the services that we provide, such as apartments and co-working spaces, want to be able to have experiences surrounding that particular culture, that particular place in which they're traveling to. So what we've been able to do by onboarding these experiences is we've told these people that are restaurant owners, fashion owners, and all of this, that we're going to bring market to you. We're going to bring a lot of people to use your services. And in return for that, we only want you to give discounts to these people, not to Hector, but to these people that actually come in to use these services. So what we've been able to do with that is we've been able to generate multiple folds of users over time and over time, just because there's just so much free value services that has been offered to these users. You understand? So you always have to understand that it's about your users and whether or not they're happy about using your product. Because as long as they're not getting that value satisfaction, you're just another app, you're just another software company, you're just another internet service. So you have to understand what that entails and how you're able to go into the market with that. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Hadi. I think value proposition is key, and it's very, very key also just to provide value to the customer, but also for differentiation, because I think that's something very key and something that definitely every founder, if you're looking to build a marketplace, if it's not a marketplace, whatever you're building, you need to be clear on what that value proposition is and what that unique value that you are giving to the customer that nobody else can is. And just to add to what everybody has said, I think we have some really, really great points. I really love what Arusha said about being patient. And I talked about what Charles said about leveraging on like distributing ownership and getting that buy-in from stakeholders in a way that blockchain, the new technology, makes that possible to do in a way that wasn't possible before. But one thing I just want to add just to is just when you're starting out, and this ties into Arusha's point of being patient and sticking with your idea and pushing through, it's very important for you to be very obsessed as well with data and what is the data telling you, right? And you need to kind of have, because there's going to be so much outside noise about what it is that you're building. Like I said, and I've said several times before, have a focus on the goal, but then have your own internal milestones so that even if it feels like, oh, this isn't going and this isn't going, you know what milestones you've set and you know you are hitting those milestones and you know that if you stick with it long enough, you're going to get to that goal. So be very, very obsessed about data, set internal milestones and really focus on the path that will get you through those milestones to show that you're on a path of growth. So that's just another point to take note of. All right, so we're kind of like wrapping up. I think if anybody has any questions, definitely leave it on the chat or you could raise your hand and we could take you on. But I do have one last question for all the speakers, and that is just in terms of like perspective. So the e-commerce market in Africa is slated to be about 46.1 billion already, and then it is slated to grow up to 180 billion
dollars by 2025, and that's just in like about 2 years. So what would be your perspective? What is your individual perspectives just from playing in the space? What is your individual perspective on the opportunity that lays in e-commerce, and what is going to be the thing that moves the needle the most from your experience in the industry? So this is just kind of like a perspective sort of question. And I think, so I think I'll start with Charles.
Great, thanks. I also have to drop in a couple minutes, so thank you for letting me first.
That's fine.
I think there's a lot to be excited about, right? When you look at the continent, it is the youngest continent in the world, right? So we all know that new technologies are much more likely to be adopted by the youth. So there's a perfect setup there. And Africa is the most rapidly digitizing continent in the world. The number of folks with smartphones this year is going to be almost 20% higher than the number of folks with smartphones last year. It's just an incredible, incredible rate of growth. And that is going to unlock so many efficiencies across, you know, logistics, marketing, payments, everything that's necessary for e-commerce to work. So I think that there's a lot to be excited about looking forward. But there's also a lot of work that has to go into it, right? And we've got to shift retail consumption behavior. And I think personally, what I'm most excited about helping to shift that behavior is being able to give incentives to merchants and to consumers that enable them to appreciate over time, to participate in the financial upside of what we're doing, but also to participate in the governance and be able to have a voice in how these platforms grow. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Charles, and thanks for sharing with us today. All right, Arusha?
Yeah, I think I'd just like to build on what Charles mentioned before he dropped off. I think there's a lot of potential in this space. And what's interesting is with technology moving at the rate that it is, that innovation is bound. And, you know, I think as companies or as people, we have to be very accepting of adapting to new technologies and innovations. And I think being open to those kind of experiences where everyone can grow at once. And just seeing so many of us, you even just talking about marketplaces today, that, you know, we've already started thinking in that direction. And I think the potential is immense. I think, though, in all of this, we just shouldn't forget the consumer and their needs at the end of the day, with what might look sexy for the time to design or come up with. But I think this is a great venture. And I think this will go really well in the coming years.
All right, thanks,
Arusha. Hadi. I don't know the word to use, but like the upside is just so enormous. That's what everybody should just understand. We've looked at the trend, we've looked at what's to come, we've looked at in so many sectors, from prop tech to health sector to, and it's just all green upwards. And that has poured me into starting a new company called Intentions. And the company is solely based on just helping entrepreneurs actually launch and then raise funds, basically, because I understand that there's a lot that needs to be done that we've barely scratched the surface of. Do you understand? So, like I said, there's a lot of upside. There's a lot to gain. If there's anybody that's looking to jump into tech, this is the right time. There's so much room for growth, and this guy is just wide enough for everybody to fly in and then make relevant impact in. So, yeah, that's it for me.
Thanks, Hadi. Fikayo.
Okay. I mean, I'm just going to echo what everybody else has said. The market is huge. The potential is huge. There's a teeming youth population across the entire continent. And there's the potential that with sufficient policy backing, they will tap into this market heavily. And I mean, with ample penetration of internet, even the most remote parts of Africa will get access, will jump on the e-commerce wagon. So in terms of what the possibilities are in the next few years, I mean, it's mind-blowing. And we might even exceed the projected numbers. So I'm excited for what the future holds at CrossBot. So thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you. Okay. So it seems like we have one question. Esther, do we have any other questions typed in? All right. So I think Kennedy wants, I think he wants to speak, has a question. So Kennedy, you can go ahead.
Okay. thank you guys for all coming on. I learned a lot today. My question today is, you guys had built a marketplace. Like, what was your wage? What I mean by that is, for example, Uber started in San Francisco before they went to other places, other cities. Amazon started selling books before they started selling other products. So what was your wage and why did you choose to start with that particular product or service? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Kennedy. Any of the speakers want to take that?
Maybe I answer.
So,
okay.
Okay.
Okay, Hadi, you can go. Yeah.
Okay. So basically for Hector, we started, like I said, sometime around 2019. And I was so optimistic about the product because I'd been in the real estate industry for over 10 years. And this was one problem that was constantly disturbing literally every homeowner. As a matter of fact, more than 60% of the houses currently in Abuja and Lagos are actually empty because the prices of actually acquiring these houses are too high. So these houses start to lay fallow and over time they start to rot without any form of return on investment. We started, because of the opportunity, we started building the product immediately sometime around 2019. So in acquiring the team, the right team that was going to help me build my product, I sent a brief to somebody and the next thing he told me, he just flew in from the UK and he was like, yo, you're building Airbnb. I'm like, what's that? And he said Airbnb. So we had to go Google Airbnb, and then we saw the value proposition, the value ads, and all of that. And as much as it was a little bit saddening because I felt like there was a major competitor in the market, it gave me a different insight because at the time, Airbnb was just starting to enter the African market. So in my head, I was like, okay, we're going to give these guys a run for that money. We've not gotten there yet, but I mean, we're hoping to be able to be a major competitor for that. And that's the reason why we've not just provided accommodation services to people, we've actually tweaked our value proposition to be able to provide more better services at a more efficient rate than what our competitors are currently providing. We're providing more services, we're providing them at a cheaper rate, and we're providing them more efficiently. We're a local market and we understand what the local people want. And we're able to go about providing the service in a cultural, ethic way that just satisfies the customer. So, yes, I hope that answers your question, Kennedy.
Thanks, Hadi. Fikayo, you can also chip in.
No, I mean, Hadi is spot on. But aside from that, so we took a different approach, right? We needed to understand what the size of our market was. So we understood that we had the problem, but I mean, my team is largely, you know, let's say we are not nano or micro in any way, but we needed to understand the market we were playing in. So first things first, about the first 3 to 6 months, we spent it research and development. Just working on wireframes, flows, tearing out different types of things and trying to come up with the right fit for the markets, right? And at the end of the day, when all was said and done, we pushed the first thing into the market. Digital adoption was minimal. We got the pulse of the market to understand what the challenges were, made the tweaks, and continued tweaking until, I would say we've not stopped tweaking because we are still constantly, as of this moment, we're still running a market research commissioned by the company to understand certain demographics. So we're looking to play in all emerged states, for instance, Abuja, Port Harcourt, Lagos. Currently, our foothold is 80% Lagos, then a few scattering of transactions here and there across the rest of Nigeria. But now, in order to expand into those markets, you still have to do research, you still have to understand people's motivations and what works for them. But in terms of our flow, research first, then into development, and then constant iterations of changes based on market realities. Yes.
Thanks a lot, Fikayo. Kennedy, I hope that helped.
Yes, thank you.
And answered your question. Thank you. All right, so we have William. So William will take your question, and then I think we can wrap it up for tonight. William, you can go ahead.
Hello. So my name is William from Kenya. And first of all, thank you so much for creating such platform. It has been a learning experience for myself. All I can say is that initially I was I'm a travel consultant by profession, but because of the COVID situation, I had to jump into the e-commerce sector. So since 2020, I've been in e-commerce software. So I currently have a shop. You can check it out. It's coolstuff.shop, where we purchase things outside and then sell them online. My only challenge has been on the e-commerce sector, whereby sometimes we try list items on the site, but now leveraging on customer trying to get sales or leads from those market sales, it becomes an issue. I've tried running ads, but organically doesn't work. So I wanted to know what's the best formula you can leverage on the marketplace where you can list your product and then maybe people can notice you in the best way possible.
All right. Do any of the speakers want to take that? But William, let me ask you a follow-up question. So are you listed on your own site or you are listed on a marketplace? You have a store on a marketplace that other vendors can...
First of all, yes, we are listed on our website, on our marketplace.
Okay, on your own website. Okay.
I think from there, we normally get returns very well in terms of customers, referrals, running ads. But the challenge has been, I tried listing the places now on the marketplace, but my leveraging customers there has always been an issue.
All right, so... getting customers from the marketplace has been not as great as getting customers from your website. So how can you leverage? All right. So Fikayo, I saw you wanted to say something. So maybe I'll let you touch on that and then I'll chip in.
Yes. So the marketplace you listed on, I just want to ask a few clarifying questions. The marketplace you're referring to, it's also yours. Correct.
Not ours. Then I'm currently using Gigi and Ayaduka. So Ayaduka and Gigi in Kenya are for other people who have created a marketplace.
Okay, but on your own platform, you get on your own website, you get leads coming in.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So off the top of my head, I would say people do not go to the places you're listing at for the services you're rendering. Right. They come to you for the services you're rendering on your platform, but on those other places. So Gigi, to the best man, Gigi is sort of like a classified type platform. And I believe it's a function of what I'm interested in any place that I go to. Say, take myself for instance, if I'm in Nigeria, but if I want to shop outside the country, if I get on Best Buy, for instance, I am looking to buy electronics, gadgets and stuff. If I get on, if I get on any of the fashion platforms, Shein, Farfetch, whatever it is, I'm looking to buy clothing. Now, think about it. If a platform known for selling fashion products lists someone in tech sales or gadget sales, the person in gadget sales most likely will not get as much traction on that platform. So I think it's a function of looking at the places you listed and seeing what people mostly go there for.
Mm-hmm.
If they go there for services like yours, then maybe if there's a possibility of spending some money to be featured or easily seen, you know, all those VIP ads and stuff, you can explore that. But if that is not the case, I think you should just increase efforts on pushing your own platform where you've identified that you get a number of leads from. You can scale up your SEO, you know, do proper search ads and all to make sure that more people are able to find you.
Okay.
My two cents.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Fikayo. And just to like touch on that, I think Fikayo, the major point he did was like extremely important. Are your customers, are your ideal customers where you are trying to list your products and services? So I think that's like the first question. But then when it comes to marketplaces, in my experience, there's a method to the madness. And there is, so now the great thing about marketplaces, which is what I think you're trying to leverage, is other traffic. People already know this platform. These platforms already have their own traffic. How can you tap into that to create more awareness for what it is that you sell?
Mm-hmm.
But as there is a lot of traffic to those marketplaces, there's also a lot of noise and there are a lot of options that people have. And so there's always a method to the madness to actually get seen. And so you're thinking about how is your listing? What are your pictures like? What are what keywords are you using? How are people searching and all of that? And again, it depends on the kind of platform that it is. I think you mentioned Gigi, which I'm familiar with. I'm not familiar with the other one, but it depends on the kind of platform. So for instance, I'm going to use Amazon as an example just because that's more widely. So with Amazon, in a kind of Amazon situation, what you would want to do is check out what are the products most closely related to what it is that you sell? How are they listing their products? Which ones have, who are those selling what is close to what you're selling? Who are those that have probably the highest reviews? Who are those that have sold the most? Depending on whether the platform gives that information or not. But I think reviews is like a really good way. And find those high-ranking products. And then also see, so how are they naming, what are the things they're using in terms of like describing the product, in terms of the title, in terms of the description and all of that. What are the things that they're doing? And kind of try to model them. Because when it comes to a marketplace, it's really just all about search traffic. All right. Okay. All right. So I think, so that's it, Jack. All right. I think that's all that we have. Esther, I believe we don't have any other questions. Yes?
No, we don't.
All right. Thank you. And then thank you to our speakers. Thank you, Fikayo. Thank you, Hadi. Thank you, Arusha. Great to have you here. And also thanks to Charles as well. All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. I hope this was valuable. And I hope you did get a lot from it. And we'll see you next time for our next Twitter Spaces. We always like to try to get feedback from you guys about how the Twitter Spaces work. Get your suggestions on what you want to hear more of. So definitely, we have two pinned tweets. Definitely give us feedback on the session and tell us what you want to hear more of. And yeah, definitely connect with us on social media. Connect with us on Twitter, Instagram. And yeah, we'll see you next time. Thanks again to our speakers, Hadi, Arusha, Fikayo. Great to have you. And thanks to everyone who listened. It was great to have you. And we'll see you next time. Have a great evening, guys. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to our podcast. If you found value in today's episode, you can find more at gotlaunchpad.com. Stay inspired, stay innovative, and keep building those dreams. Until next time, bye.